in my opinion, you develop that strategic plan based on your company's culture and ability to deliver those objectives. And so if you built your company based on culture that then delivers that strategic plan, then the folks that are critical parts to making sure that you execute are either going to opt in or opt out. And that's the beautiful part about it, because the ones that opt out raise their hand very quickly. And so you know where changes and various positions need to occur very quickly.
Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. In today's episode, we will discuss effective and efficient organizational development with Mr. Carlos Gregory. Carlos is a private equity operating partner and currently the president of Jar Bio. Jar Bio is a leader in disinfection technology, and it's supported by high-ranking agencies, and their company vision is to deliver services to all of their facilities and industries in a flexible and affordable way to ensure they create a positive impact across all the communities in which they operate. Let's learn more together from Carlos on his vision for Jar Bio and how he's driving effective and efficient organizational development as a private equity partner. Jack, I'm really looking forward to hearing Carlos's perspective.
Likewise, Jonathan. Thank you. So in this episode, we will further explore effective and efficient change management practice. We will explore with Carlos several key components to ERP organizational change success, including change management, organizational development, and the role of innovation. We will explore strategic business planning, organizational development, creating and executing company vision and strategy, rapidly identify opportunities and obstacles to business objectives, and developing innovative solutions by collaborating with key stakeholders. We will also examine developing and building teams that thrive in a hardworking, high engagement, and customer-focused cultures, inspiring dedication, loyalty, and accountability by utilizing adaptive leaderships, methodologies, and achieving aggressive goals by leveraging results-focused priorities. Carlos, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and participate in the ERP podcast. In this particular time that we live in, and you know, to be an equity partner and in the industry that we're driving forward. So, you know, thanks again for the opportunity. Excited to be here and excited to teach them a little bit about Jar Bio and what we do.
Great, and thank you so much for being on our show. It's a pleasure to have you, and looking forward to sharing your insight with our listeners. So let's dive in, Carlos. First question is, we all know that there is effective and efficient change management, and then there is change management. So how would you define effective change management?
I would say that effective change management is controlled. I think that the recent, in parentheses, word pivot has been very common to everybody in industry. Pivot is really just another word for change. And I believe what we've Paul come to learn and appreciate is that, you know, the faster you do it, the faster your opportunity to survive. But if you don't control that in an efficient and effective way by identifying, you know, what those priorities for change are, who it is that you're ultimately trying to impact, and then manage the change amongst the leaders inside of your organization, then you have chaos and ineffective change management. So for me, the definition is controlled change is effective change management.
Carlos, this is an area I really love, and our listeners will know that this is a great passion of mine. So when I hear you talk about change management, what comes to my mind is, at what level is organizational development dependent on effective and efficient change management? And as I see it, I often call that sort of discussion change leadership. How do you see the relationship between those two things?
I'm not sure that I see them as different. For me, you know, the entire organization is based on its culture, and in large part, it's due to the leadership. And so in order to be effective, you know, throughout the various parts, if you will, management levels, leadership levels of the organization, you know, you really have to drive that consistently. And so I've been in organizations where, you know, we had a lot of very important items that needed to be delivered, but there was not a lot of consideration given to the leadership that was implementing those items. And so, you know, what I believe is that the best way forward is to really have a strategic plan that identifies both the skills and the workload of the leaders who have to implement the change. When you do that, I think it flows a little bit more seamlessly, and we learn a little bit more about whether it was actual value add change to the organization, or it was just a great idea, but probably shouldn't be followed up on.
Interesting insight, Carlos. So in what ways does an organizational culture that advocates for innovation contribute to positive outcomes in terms of organizational development? So we were just speaking a little bit on leadership, but what about organizational culture?
I believe that organizational culture is at the forefront of every operation. I believe that in today's society, and more now than ever, people have a choice of who they want to work with. And, you know, you have to create a culture that is sticky, that wants people around, and, you know, that gives them the opportunity to leverage their talents and their skills and their experience. And sometimes it's not a very lengthy experience with all of the leadership changes that have occurred in organizations from industry to industry. But I think that everyone wants to be valued. And I believe that, you know, when we come from different parts and different segments of industry, then we really are able to provide some input that innovates a particular space. We see that obviously in our organization with JR Bio and some of the other platform companies that we've invested in. I say that culture is at the forefront of it, and we try to deliver a service-based culture. And by that, I mean that we're less focused on what we need to do as an organization for ourselves, and we're more focused on trying to identify what our customer needs are and then anticipate those needs and deliver them as necessary.
I like that response, Carlos. I heard a whole bunch of things in that response, and I really appreciate it. We could spend a whole hour, I think, just following up on your comments there. But, you know, you, really just to summarize, you had mentioned that culture needs to be sticky, right, in the sense, in a positive sense, that and in a way that attracts people to the organization so that they buy into the mission and the vision and the values. And you'd also mentioned some practical ways, right, that happens. You'd mentioned everyone needs to be valued. That's through innovation. You mentioned customer focus. I heard you say organizational learning. And I heard you say acceptance to change and flexibility and adaptability. Great comment.
Carlos, I'm really struck with your answer here around the importance that you give to culture. And I personally love that. I often see in the change world, there's a sense of rigor to predefined plans, whether that's in the nature of a strategic plan. And so what I'm really curious about here is, how do you connect your intention around culture to your strategic plans? So how does change in culture fit in? Is it a conversation in the boardroom? At what level? Help us see.
Yeah, I tell you that, you know, the great thing about a strong culture is that you opt in or you opt out as a leader or as a frontline worker. And I think that, you know, that's the key to aligning the culture to the strategic plan. The strategic plan is based on the company's ability to meet certain key performance indicators and objectives and goals and metrics and, you know, whatever specifically it is that you're trying to accomplish as an organization to continue to be innovative and customer driven. And in my opinion, you develop that strategic plan based on your company's culture and ability to deliver those objectives. And so if you built your company based on culture that then delivers that strategic plan, then the folks that are critical parts to making sure that you execute are either going to opt in or opt out. And that's the beautiful part about it, because the ones that opt out raise their hand very quickly. And so you know where changes and various positions need to occur very quickly.
So I want to dive in a little deeper here. So it almost sounds like culture is a strategic tool for you guys and way to accelerate your implementation and delivery of your strategic plan. If that's true, and I'm understanding you correctly, who in your organization talks about it? Where does that conversation live for you, both in the portfolio company and in JARBio?
I believe it certainly starts with me. I hold myself accountable and ultimately responsible for everything. But one of the critical aspects of maintaining that over time is, you know, number one, first and foremost, anytime somebody's being onboarded, right? There's a lot of clarity and a lot of time and energy spent around culture and what we're about and the things that we deliver and what we've done as an organization to understand who we are and what our footprints are and what our guiding principles are. And I tell you that I didn't make that up, obviously. There's a lot of great leaders before me that have done this, but I took a page out of the Disney book.
Sure.
Years ago, I had an opportunity, you know, as a high school student to work for Disney, and they put me through 8 weeks of orientation on the Disney way. And so, you know, that stuck with me over time, and we're very keen to making sure that not only onboarding, but as folks are spending time with our organization and we're doing performance reviews or one-on-ones, you know, that's continued to be communicated. And so I think people sense that and appreciate that we want to make sure that they know where the company is going to the extent that we can share, you know, some critical information. We also want to make sure that they know where they stand as it relates to where we're going.
So, Carlos, I'd like to follow up a little bit on Jonathan's question. And I heard you say in your response, really, that strategic planning starts with creating and executing company vision and strategy in general. So it's communicating and sharing that vision and your go-forward strategy. How do you do that practically and tactically? Can you share more with our listeners on how you would go about that?
Yeah, it's not easy, but it's consistent. It's consistent delivery. So once a week, I have a team meeting with my key leaders, if you will, inside of the organization. And then I expect that they're having a similar short meeting with everyone that reports to them and so on and so forth throughout the organization. And then on a quarterly basis, we have more strategic meetings for the company-wide. We talk about, you know, where we are, how we're doing, where we're going, what our customers are telling us, where we feel we're falling short, but we definitely spend a lot of time focused on our strengths and what we are doing well. I believe that if we run our culture using our strengths first, then they will overcome our weaknesses and we'll know better who we are and what we're trying to do. So tactically, you know, that's kind of how it works. It's more of a weekly, monthly, quarterly rotation of communication and just follow up and being present with our team.
I'm going to borrow that, Carlos. I like that phrase, good culture overcomes weaknesses. I love it. It's so true.
Carlos, I get a real sense that Disney experience was just the start of your exposure to this sort of way of thinking. At least I'm hearing bits and pieces of that in your answer. And I find myself really curious, and I want to explore that with you in our next question. So when we're talking about change and how we respond to what's happening in real time, you know, the pandemic for disinfection businesses must have been a real change. So I'm curious, how do you support your team and yourself to adjust in real time and course correct as the facts on the ground are changing? And how do you do this from a four quadrant perspective? So what kind of cultural norms do you help set? What ways do you model this yourself? And what kind of systems, like that weekly check-in you were just talking to Jack about, support that way of operating in real time?
That's a great question. So, you know, I'll be a little personal on it. So I'm a pretty active guy generally, in that I meditate, I exercise frequently, and all of these things. And I do that to maintain status quo based on the amount of stress that's typically change related that I'm dealing with. An acceleration of stress and change means that I have to accelerate or increase my output or input of exercise and meditation. Because anytime you're going through anything like what we're going through right now or what we've been going through in the last 14 months or any significant change, whether it's a life event or et cetera, we have to be patient and we have to stay calm. And I think what we've been able to do, or what I try to do with our team, is in moments of uncertainty, create some certainty by over-communicating. So what we would probably do on a weekly, monthly, quarterly rotation, we would increase to make sure that folks heard from us what we believed was going on, and that we heard from them what they were thinking and feeling.
So, Carlos, I'm hearing two pieces of this answer, and I find myself even more curious. One is on the system side, to over-communicate in moments of uncertainty. And then this relates to a theme I keep hearing in this conversation, so please correct me if I'm wrong, is to both increase the inputs in relation to stress, but model that through yourself as a leader. And that might have this beautiful effect of giving others the space to increase what they need to respond in real time as well. Am I capturing that correctly, Carlos?
Yes, that's certainly the objective. And, you know, I believe that some of the folks close to me would tell you that I try to pour into them professionally and personally, because I don't believe that there is a work-life balance. I believe that it's a work-life integration.
Mm. I like that statement.
And I really like the other quote that I'm going to steal from you, Carlos.
I'm going to start charging for these.
I will. We will appropriately cite these for sure. But in moments of uncertainty, create certainty by over-communicating. I like that. So, Carlos, we discussed innovation in a previous question. So my question is, just to follow up on that idea a little bit, is doesn't developing innovative solutions require collaborating with key stakeholders? And if so, how do you advocate for optimal stakeholder collaboration?
Yeah, no, we try to create a space where disagreements are welcome, but that they're studied and that they're supported. And I think ultimately we make better decisions for what direction we're going to go, you know, how innovative we can be with something when we challenge each other. And to that end, I think it's important to have folks that are, again, you know, not everybody from the same space. For example, if you've been in real estate for 20 years and you have a really good understanding of the land development market, you know, you might be able to add a very, very unique perspective to how a medical device should be sold inside of a particular segment of the market, you know, versus someone who's been selling medical devices their entire life. You know, so it's trying to find ways to be innovative, to engage in positive disagreements where they're welcome, but again, where they're supported. We don't want folks coming in and playing the devil's advocate just for the heck of it, right? Just to see if, you know, your arguments are solid. We want folks who've taken the time to read the pre-reads and look at what we're trying to do, and does this make sense? You know, why not? And that's how we try to engage innovation and make that part of our culture.
Yeah, and that's such a powerful idea, is just constructive disagreement, really. And so now I'm going to paraphrase again, but yes, I'm going to steal another quote from you, and that is, disagreements are okay and welcome, but they are studied so we can learn from them. But I think that's such a powerful attribute and influence in any organization, is to know that, you know, you don't necessarily have to prevent all disagreements and even to a certain degree healthy conflict, but what you do want to do is create an organization of learning so that you can share and learn from each other even during constructive conflict. So what a powerful idea.
It seems to work okay. I mean, you know, sometimes it's better than others.
Yeah. And, you know, Carlos, like you said earlier, sometimes leadership is easier said than done, right? And I don't think I know anybody that would say organizational learning is a bad thing, but some organizations definitely do it much better than others, you know, and that's through effective leadership and change management for sure. But such an incredibly important idea.
I often stole the idea of constructive conflict and its relation to innovation from Ed Catmull, the head of Pixar. So there's a lot here that deeply resonates. What I'm really curious about, though, is, again, this modeling approach of how you bring that into a way of interacting with your team. And acquisitions, let alone private equity, can be a really tough business. And add in a pandemic, and I'm sure, as you mentioned, the stress levels must be high. So how do you show up as a leader to help your teams thrive in this hardworking, challenging environment and reinforce that customer-focused culture that you mentioned earlier? You know, what do you do? What do you believe? How do you approach them? And help us see how you help them thrive.
Yeah, so, you know, again, I think it goes back to my earlier comment of, you know, it starts with me. And, you know, if I'm feeling it, then I know that they're feeling it. And so what am I doing to help myself improve that? And then, you know, share that with them and hold them accountable to doing those things as well, right? And it's simple things, you know. So right now, for some folks, it's a challenge to continue to go to the gym because they're all working at home and we have COVID and, you know, people are afraid to get out and go to the gym or whatever the case may be. But I recognize that being able to exercise consistently has a significant impact on how we perform our lives, frankly. You know, when folks are coming to me, some of my teamers are, you know, they're having a tough day, or letting, you know, some of the other leadership team members know, hey, these folks are having a tough day. You know, we follow that very closely because we're very concerned for their well-being. We want to make sure that they're doing good for themselves because ultimately that's going to have the greatest impact on the company and our customers. And so we try to stay very attuned to the patterns of behavior of our closest team members so that we can help them through whatever challenges they may be going through at any time.
So, Carlos, you know, you definitely have a common theme here as you answer these questions for us, and that is doing the simple and the little things consistently, because they can make a big difference in sending that tone throughout your organization. And I know that you are, I would say, very knowledgeable and in tune with this idea of adaptive leadership methodologies. Can you share some of your adaptive leadership approach in which you yourself inspire dedication, loyalty, and accountability to your team? You just mentioned in your previous response this idea of ownership and accountability. But can you share more on how you go about that, on inspiring dedication and loyalty and accountability and some of these other pretty important stakeholder, I guess, characteristics within a healthy organization?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, it all starts with just making sure that everybody has a clear understanding of what's important. What's important to me, what's important to the company, what's important to our customers, and knowing what we, you know, what's expected of them. And then making sure that we have a really good understanding of where they are in their professional career so that we can very quickly boost or enhance whatever skill sets that they need to be able to achieve the goals that we are setting for them. One thing that the team hears me say often is, I hate to lose more than I love to win. And so we have to be able to adapt to whatever the situation is very quickly and remain focused on what's important, reorganize ourselves in such a way that puts us in the best position to achieve those goals. And we do that. Again, it's all about communication. And I think if there's a consistent stream to the way that I try to lead the companies and that we try to adapt or change or innovate or do anything, is that we focus on the customer, but it's all about the team. And if the team isn't lining up and ready to go and 100% motivated to accomplish the goals, then we're all going to struggle. So yeah. You know, we fight for each other and we work for each other and we achieve our goals.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of these ideas, Carlos, are, you know, and especially when it comes to this idea of culture, it can be very abstract and very hard to kind of bite into, right? To make it more visible and objective versus subjective so that you can do something about your culture. And how, when you talk about, you know, boosting or enhancing skills or remaining focused or reorganizing, can you maybe share with our listeners, and I know you're very effective at this, but do you use metrics, or what do you use that's easy and highly visible for the organization to see so that you know whether or not you are or are not being focused, or if you are reorganizing appropriately? What are some of your tactical approaches to making sure that some of these incredibly important ideas that you're talking about are actually visible so that they can be discussed as meaningful conversations?
Yeah, so it's really all based on our KPIs, right? What are our key performance indicators? We try to follow just three for the organization. As it breaks down lower from there, and depending on the platform company, they all have their own, right? So we try to use the rule of three when we identify with what our goals and objectives are, whether they are, again, the company level, and the company's pretty basic stuff, right? I think the things you'll hear in most companies, revenue, profitability. And one of the things that's important to me is churn, right? So overall customer churn. But again, that then breaks down into other KPIs depending on what responsibilities you have, right? So if you're business development, you know, your key performance indicators are going to be based on your particular role and function. If you're customer service, if you're innovation marketing, you know, whatever the case may be. And so, you know, we do use metrics and SMART goals to make sure that everybody understands where they stand. But those things are fundamental.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not doing that, then you're missing the boat completely. It just goes to back to making sure that people understand where they stand. And as you're saying, it's, well, you know, how do you show them?
Yeah.
And that's how, right? You know, you show them that they're winning.
Yeah. I like to ask that question because, you know, because it is in part setting that tone within an organization in terms of a healthy, productive culture. It is about talking through the metrics and the KPIs and that which is visible and a little more concrete, right, in a bit objective. But then on the other side of that, leadership, effective leadership is often those things that are much more difficult. And, you know, everything I hear you saying throughout this conversation is, you know, the signs of an effective leader, you know, how you conduct yourself when you're walking down the hallway and water cooler talk and after work and at lunch and the message that you send and the tone you send and how you deal with constructive conflict in the boardroom and, you know, how you kind of work your way through that. And that's often very much a craft and an art. And it, you know, it can be developed, those types of leadership skills. But I think usually, you know, I like to talk about in terms of organizational culture, it's really both things. And some are a little more abstract and some are a little more concrete, but they all make a difference.
Yeah, I do see, though, that, you know, a lot of the folks, particularly in my space, more finance-based backgrounds and banking-based backgrounds, and it's all about the numbers. And the numbers are important, but it's certainly much easier to count than it is to make. And if you're not manufacturing widgets and you're involved in a service sector, which is incredibly appealing to just about every private venture capital company on the planet, then you've got to find a way to make your metrics align to the people you're servicing and less about the numbers and profitability. Because if they're not happy, it doesn't matter how amazing you are, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Carlos, yep. I love that answer. And there's a couple things here I want to explore where your background comes from. You sort of sound like you see yourself as almost unusual in your space. So I'm curious there. And then I'd like to get your sense on what does it take to show up in a way that helps your teams achieve those kind of goals, right? You're explaining the KPIs. You might even be explaining the implications for those team members of these KPIs. But when you're creating goals, and we had Dr. Clark on in one of our first episodes, who gave us some of his common mistakes that organizations often do. I'm curious, can you give us Carlos's corollary to that? What are the common mistakes within a private equity space in a service world for misaligning people with businesses and the clients they serve?
Yeah, I think the very first one is I think you asked a few different questions there. I'm gonna do my best to capture all of them.
I did. Let's talk about your background first.
Yeah. So I think it's a little bit different is because, you know, I was on the service side. I was on the front of it and learned the finance side as I came up through business. So for me, it was always about how do we service the customer? And if we're doing a legendary job of customer service, then we're never really going to have a sales pipeline issue or a revenue problem so long as we're being good stewards of the money that we make. And I've met others in the business where, you know, come to me and say, yeah, but, you know, your KPIs, and you got these metrics and your cost of goods sold and all, you know. So, and yeah, all those things are important, but they shouldn't be how we lead the organization forward. It really should always be about what are we doing for the customer? Where is the customer's interest going in the next 6, 12, 18, 24 months? And how are we going to anticipate those needs so that when the customer is there and ready to make those purchase decisions, we're already there, right? And they're looking to us to solve that need versus, you know, spending a lot of time and energy on the numbers and the industry and competitive and benchmarking and all of those things. And again, I'm not trying to undervalue those things because they are incredibly important and you do want to run a profitable organization. But if we're not focusing on the customer, then we've missed the boat completely. And so I believe that I'm different in that sense, in that, you know, a lot of these, and I'll answer the next question, which is what are the most common mistakes some of these companies make, yeah. is that they, you know, they take their account managers who are responsible for a book of business with XYZ clients, and they tell them to spend 60% of their time behind a computer reporting information and inputting data so that it can all roll up into this nice, beautiful system so that the CFO can put a nice report together for the stakeholders.
And what's the cost?
What's the cost of doing that? Well, it's damaging because if your, you know, account manager or vice president who's supposed to be constantly in communication with that particular customer is tied behind a computer and that time isn't being offset some way either by additional support or an improved dashboard to input the data or, you know, a way to facilitate all of that, then eventually the customer is going to start noticing that they're not around as much. And they'll be loyal to an extent until that moment where, you know, in many situations, your account manager, your vice president confides in the customer and says, I'm sorry, I'm not being there for you, but it's because I have to do this for my company. And that's when you're in trouble. That's when you've lost your team member. That's when you've broken the culture of being customer focused. And now your team is more concerned in how they try to be honest with the customer than the organization looking at it and saying, you know, this change was not the right one. This data is important, but it's not more important than our people spending time with our clients.
Carlos, that to me was such a powerful answer. And I just want to highlight this for our listeners. When we're talking about how he's able to do a course correction model, I'd listen to this answer as well. Because there's a lot of gold in what you just said.
I don't know about that. Maybe a little, some nickel. But thank you.
My quote list, Jonathan, from Carlos is up to about 10 now. So I may have to pay Carlos for these quotes. What a fun conversation. Lots of great advice and insight. Clearly, Carlos, you've been there, done that with leadership. And I think that's well understood through this conversation.
So, Carlos, I mentioned this in my long-winded question, so I'm sorry if I dropped that. I was just so curious about your background. We had infamous and famous Dr. Clark on in one of our earlier podcasts about performance, and he had this great conversation with Jack and I about motivation and the science of using goals to motivate, how big they should be, what the common mistakes are. And I'm really curious around, what would be your corollary to Dr. Clark from your private equity experience and working in the service world and seeing service as such a core aspect of business? Any tips or common mistakes you can give our listeners about how to motivate teams?
Yeah. I think over my career, I've learned that people have developed a bar of what they think they're capable of accomplishing. And as their leaders, it's our goal to identify the ones which are worth investing our time to help believe that they're capable of achieving more than that, that there is a better part of them that they haven't delivered to this world yet. And so when we're establishing those goals, we have to be mindful of understanding what's realistic, but also understand what the individual is capable of doing if we truly believe in our abilities to read them, and try to push them to achieve those goals and then support them along the way to make sure that they do that. Because the moment that they break through that ceiling, then you don't have to hold hands anymore. Now they're the giants that are carrying you to the next level.
You're really helping them break through to a next level of their performance.
Yeah. And you know, obviously that doesn't apply to the entire employee base, but you know, there's people that you can see in them that they want to, and that no one's ever told them that they could.
And I think that makes all the difference in a healthy organization, right, is just employees that are highly motivated. you know, they have the resources, they have the knowledge, they have the organizational tools and leadership to keep them motivated. And, you know, all the stakeholders, they're motivated for different reasons, right? And I think the more that you can understand that and kind of what drives people and what motivates people, you know, in general, and especially in the workplace, it's a win-win for everybody. You know, higher organizational performance, more engaged and valued stakeholders and employees that enjoy their job. And I like what you said earlier, Carlos, it's, you know, kind of that work-life balance. They're integrated, right? So when employees spend so much time working or at work, why not make it fun? Make it enjoyable. Make it an environment that's highly motivational and valued. What a great insight. So Carlos, if you were to distill down your years of experience, your expertise, what are your closing remarks that you'd like to leave with our listeners in terms of effective change management in general? Jonathan and I say this on every podcast, and we mean it, because at the end of the day, this podcast is all about collaborative learning. It's just sharing and enjoying a topic that is so rich and so valuable. But we like to learn from people. But if you had to just distill down your experience, what would you like to say to our listeners when it comes to effective change management and organizational performance?
Yeah, I would say that, number one, what is it exactly that you're trying to solve in this change? Number two, do you have the team capable of executing it at the level that you are going to expect? And number three, how much of your own personal time, energy, money are you going to invest in this to make it successful? And then once you've answered those three questions, I think you can build something that's worth going after.
That's great. Great questions. And obviously the reflection in those questions and then taking action to the answers of those questions is pretty important. That's great. Carlos, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. We really value your insight and your leadership. So thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you on our show today.
No, gentlemen, the pleasure's been all mine. I mean, it's been a great conversation. Not easy questions, good questions, things that we should all talk about more often. So I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast and participate here along you great individuals.
Such a pleasure, Carlos.
Thank you again, and be well, Carlos, and keep in touch.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.